Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read, "Data Raider has not paid enough," the fake me said. My image walked in the dark alongside a building that looked familiar, not by a long shot. My voice was cold and my eyes were intense. It's time they are brought low. The clip ended as I realized the setting of the video. It was one of the buildings back at the Data Raider complex. Reed was going to target his own compound. And now, episode 14. As I stared out at Reed's compound, something clicked in my mind and it all came together. I understood why Reed was having the fake me target Data Raider. It was about the kids. He was trying to convince them they were my next targets. It was so obvious I wondered why I had not put it together before. Reed had probably planned on this from the beginning. He had just escalated the timing after I'd shot Sam. Reed had been only too happy to turn Sam into a martyr, even though he'd taken one of his best men out of play. I doubted Reed saw it that way. My gut told me he had just zeroed in on the opportunity Sam's death had presented. I took a deep breath and let it out. While Reed was a great Beltran admirer, it looked like he was not following the playbook completely. The children knew they were working for Data Raider. Reed wasn't repeating Beltran's mistake of setting up a shell company. Perhaps he figured that trying to convert me to Digon is where Beltran had gone wrong. The problem with Beltran and Reed was that they didn't understand the human connection. They thought they could move people around like pawns on a chessboard, never giving a second thought to what they were thinking or feeling. They lacked empathy, the ability to view things from another's perspective. I ground my teeth as I worked through my thoughts. Reed was using the attacks on Data Raider to foster the children's fear in the same way Peck had done with the public as a whole. What was he hoping to accomplish by doing all of this? The fear would only make the children pliable in his hands for so long. Was he that willing to destroy a substantial chunk of his business operations just to further commit them to his cause? If so, to what end? What value could these children provide that justified the cost to his business? It had never been more important that I help the children learn the truth about what Reed had done to their parents. I just did not have any idea how to do it, and they were not going to believe anything they learned from me. When my eyes settled on the parked cars at the compound, I burst into a run, heading straight towards the guardhouse I had taken pains to avoid. I laughed without mirth as I went, wishing Margaret and Benji could see me now. I might have killed Sam, but would the cruel person they believed me to be run towards a compound that was about to be blown up, with the intention of saving as many people as I could? The workers at the plant had to be warned. It galled me Reed did not hesitate to send them to their deaths. From a pure cost standpoint, it was shocking he was so committed to the children's tutelage that he was willing to sacrifice so much. Was he that insane, or was I missing a bigger piece of the picture? Judging by the fact that Reed and the children had just been here, I assumed it would not be long before the bombs went off. What better way to motivate the children than by convincing them they had merely avoided death? I had a bad feeling this wasn't going to be like the times when he had arranged the attacks to minimize the death count. He had more incentive to kill because he was targeting his own facility. He wanted to make sure to kill as many people as he could. It would give him real moral authority when he condemned me. It would make people less likely to believe anything I might say. I all of a sudden wished I had revealed more of what I knew to Shannon. After this had went down, she was going to have a difficult time believing anything I said. It would become more difficult for all those who knew me to think I was telling the truth. I wished Chris were here to witness this firsthand. Not only that, but she but the guard would be more likely to listen to her, considering that she was pretty and professionally dressed. My jeans, shirt, and messenger bag weren't going to give the guard much confidence. That, added to the fact I was going to show up gasping for breath and covered in sweat, probably tanked any chance he had of believing me, but I had to do something. I shook my head. If Face Rec could do as they claimed, I was about to expose myself in a big way. But what other choice did I have? I could not let innocent people die. One was too many, and there were hundreds of people at the facility. While some would be a part of the criminal enterprise, most wouldn't know what Reed was about. They would be Reed's own sacrificial lambs. I couldn't imagine how he would play this, but I had a feeling it would give him a reason to tone down his sanguine rhetoric and come out more strongly against me. What does he have to gain by this, I wondered. It just couldn't be cementing the children to his cause. People will be ready to march when he calls for my blood. I almost tripped and went down, bracing myself against the wall to keep on 2 feet. I covered the distance as fast as I could, expecting with every stop that a bomb would go off or that the facility would burst into flame. The guard out front noticed me when I was a block away and came out with an M4 in hand. He hesitated before pointing it at me. "Stop where you are," he said. I threw my hands in the air and came to a stop in the middle of the street. "You have to evacuate the premises," I said. A camera at the guard station was pointed my way, and I tried to keep from looking at it. If Face Rec were connected to it, I had just shown up on their radar in a big way. I suppressed a dark smile when I thought of what Reed would think when he saw this. My hands were up in the universal position of surrender. I would like to see him spin that towards his cause. "There's a bomb," I said. "And your boss has planted it here," I thought, but knew better than to speak it aloud. I needed him to evacuate, not buy my whole story. The guard shook his head. "Impossible." He pointed with the muzzle of his weapon. "Kneel." He didn't seem to care that I was on the street. He was lucky a car had not come by. If one did, he would look like he was on the wrong side of this. The man did not strike me as the sort Reed would recruit to his criminal enterprise. He wore a wedding band, and his uniform was freshly pressed. That, combined with his clean-shaven face, made me think he was former military. He had no idea what Reed was doing. A man like this would be careful about shooting without provocation. It was important I give him none. Hopefully, I would not be identified until after I had gone. "No," I said in response to his demand, "I kneel. I'm not going to do that. You need to evacuate everybody. If you don't, what happens next will be on your head." I waved my arms. "I am unarmed." I wasn't, but my messenger bag was behind me, so I ran with it. If he noticed it, I'd put it down and encourage him to look through it, just as I had with the cop. "I am not a threat," I said. The guard studied me while chewing on his lip. "There's something familiar about—" He shook his head. "Who are you?" "Not important," I said with a shrug. "I'm going to back away. You take care of this." I waved back at the compound. "You won't regret giving the order. You will be a hero." It was an attempt on his vanity, but it fell flat. I could tell he wasn't one who dreamed of being a big man. I took a step backward, and his hand tightened on the grip of the M4, but he didn't make a move towards the trigger. His forefinger remained on the trigger guard. A weight of tension left my shoulders when I noticed that detail. I'd read the man and situation correctly. I took another step back. When my burner phone beeped, I made no move for it. "What do you know?" the guard asked. "How do you know it?" I continued backward until I felt the sole of my shoe on the curb and turned so I could navigate it. I continued on my way, wishing the guard had not brought out his gun so quick. In my haste, I hadn't thought about what things would look like from his perspective. I should have walked the last block to keep him from coming out with a gun at the ready. Instead, I had approached as if I were going to vault over the fence and attack the place. "Check the news," I called out. Without another word or even waiting to see if he had heard me, I took off. The guard would call for help, but he would not leave his position unmanned. I hoped he took my advice and did what I suggested, but it was now out of my hands. I took the first right and ran straight for 5 blocks before coming back over to see what he had decided to do. My hands shook and my lungs felt like they would explode, but I was prepared to run again, though it might kill me. I hoped I wouldn't have to. After taking several moments to catch my breath, I peeked around the corner and was surprised to see a large group of people had congregated in the parking lot at the front of the compound. But the gate was closed, and it did not look as if anybody were about to leave. I pulled out my monocular and scanned the crowd, trying to determine if they were making any effort to leave. The guard at the back stood with his hands on his hips, looking out towards me. I pulled back, hoping he had not seen me. My burner phone beeped, so I pulled it out of my pocket. It was a message from Shannon saying that now was the time to tell what I knew. I ignored the message and tried to puzzle out what was going to happen next. There had not been any consistency between the videos being released and the timing of the attacks. Some had taken place within an hour, others had been almost half a day. My instincts told me that we did not have much longer, though I could not say why. Those people risked everything while they waited inside the compound. I looked at my watch and determined it had been 15 minutes since the most recent video. Every minute that ticked by brought us closer to what Reed had planned. My phone dinged again as I turned the corner and looked at the crowd in front of the complex. Why were they not leaving? They were making it more likely they would die, and whatever was going to come next. Something had to be done. A low, guttural sound escaped my throat, a growl, but something worse. Anger floated through me like a spewing volcano. I had sat by for too long on the sidelines while Reed played God with other people's lives. I didn't know why they were not moving, but I could wait no longer. I had to act. Cursing, I pulled out a water bottle and washed off my face. A strip of latex that had given me a small scar along the side of my jaw came next. Using the front-facing camera of my phone, I determined that I looked enough like me to do what I wanted to do. I hesitated before stepping out into the light of a street lamp and pushing the record button. I had to do something but knew what the others were going to say. Chris didn't have the power to stop Reed, and I couldn't think of a way Shannon could rein in Data Raider from her position from inside Digon. No, I needed to go direct. My other attempts at stopping this monster had been pitiful. I pressed the red dot. These videos are not for me. I don't wish any harm to the city or any of its citizens. I have a theory who is behind this, but no evidence. I can tell you this, the next facility that will be attacked is the Data Raider facility in East Philly. There is only one. If you know anybody at that facility, get on the phone now. We have little time to waste. I almost pressed play to view the video, but thought better of it. It was more important to get the message out than review how I came across. I uploaded it to YouTube and emailed the link to a list of reporters I kept on file. For good measure, I also posted it to any of the social media websites I could think of. My pulse pounded, and my head hurt. But for the first time since this whole mess had started, I felt like I was finally getting ahead. That was when the explosions started.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.